Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. So glad you're with us this morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Happy Monday to you. We're going to try to take it nice and slow and steady today. Because there's many people, according to Pastor Tim Keller, that says, who think of spiritual growth as something like high diving. They say, I'm going to give my life to the Lord. I'm going to change all these terrible habits and I'm really going to transform. Give me another 6 months and I'm going to be a new man or a new woman. But that is not what a walk is. A walk is a day in and day out praying, day in and day out Bible and Psalms reading, day in and day out obeying, talking to Christian friends and going to corporate worship, committing yourself to and fully participating in the life of a church. It is a rhythmic on and on and on. To walk with God is a metaphor that symbolizes slow and steady progress. And the speed at which things changes in this world would indicate that they would that we would be in chaotic mess all the time. But that's not what God wants us to do, and it's not how he wants us to live. So we're going to take it slow and steady today. There's a number of disturbing things in the news. We will discuss. We'll look at it through a Christian lens. We're going to find out exactly how God would want us to think. I go to always Romans 12:2, where it says, do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. So we're going to start our day with my friend Patrick Albanese. We're going to start talking about what happened over the weekend. And we will be back in just a minute. It's 6 minutes after the hour. Glad you're with us.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could...
I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
Good morning. It's 7 minutes after the hour. I'd like to read a prepared statement about my guest before we start. My guest is a high-quality person, and I applaud his transparency. And beyond that, he'll have to refer everything else to his counsel. Good morning, Patrick.
No, I'm the one that prepared that statement. You did. You should do full disclosure.
I know you did. How did you survive daylight savings time?
Actually, quite well. You know, I know that it can kind of create this sense of jet lag. So a couple of years ago, I came up with a system to survive the moving of the clocks. I go back about 2 months, and then I turn the clock back just 1 minute every day for 60 days.
Mm-hmm.
Then by the time I get there, I don't even notice it. Now, for about 2 months, I'm really way off, really way off. It's a similar to the system I use for New Year's resolutions. I start those November 1st, and I've already abandoned mine.
Yeah.
I'm way ahead.
You're way ahead of the curve.
I'm very proactive when it comes to procrastinating.
Yeah. So before we get into the heavy stuff, Rand Paul is out cutting his lawn. He lives in a gated community. And usually you live in a gated community to avoid crazy people, but he gets knocked out by an anesthesiologist. Now, normally that's not a disturbing thing.
No, I mean, now for me, I prefer to have my anesthesiologist use ether if they're trying to knock me out. Yeah. But I guess this guy might be old school. I mean, a couple of things jump out at you right away. You say, Rand Paul, you're cutting your own lawn?
That was my thought too. You don't have a lawnmower?
Yeah, it's like you can afford to live in a gated community, but you're like, what are these kids want $30 to cut the grass? That's just outrageous. So, you know, I've often, when I'm cutting my own lawn, you know, sometimes I come in with some aches and pains, but never 5 broken ribs.
Yeah, not the truth. Yeah, I guess he just was really didn't like Republicans and didn't really like his neighbor.
He didn't. Yeah. So is this just a neighborly dispute? It's kind of crazy that you would think you know, an anesthesiologist, I think that's a pretty nice job, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Yeah, I think you do quite well.
So if you're not smart enough as an anesthesiologist to realize that you could be jeopardizing a $300,000, $400,000 a year job by attacking a famous a person, someone as famous as, say, somebody who goes to Washington, D.C. and makes laws, and this isn't going to get swept under the rug. I'd be curious to see how that whole thing plays out. It's a bit crazy.
Yeah, and as we continue on the mental health issue, of course, we're searching for answers today in what happened in that little small Texas town. That is the worst mass shooting in the state's history, and it's just so sad that so many lost their lives. I think 26 were killed, and many more were wounded, and this guy was clearly not well.
Clearly not well. I mean, even the 14-year-old daughter of the pastor was gunned down. And, you know, of course, immediately the calls go out for gun control. And then, I tend to have it used to be 24-hour rule. Now it's 48 because so many facts have to come out. And I realize that for some people, you have to strike immediately, well, while there's misinformation out there to try and maybe push an agenda, because when the truth comes out, it almost always kind of gets you. It's like you go, oh, you know, it turned out that this guy was, of course, not obeying any gun laws, and it sounds like he was discharged from the Air Force because of an assault charge against his wife and children. An avowed atheist, evidently, an online, almost what we would call an evangelical atheist, who did not like Christians. And you say, well, this is going to be very interesting discovery process as to who this guy was that wasn't stable. And I'm going to just guess at this point in time that he broke a whole bunch of gun laws in the process of doing this. And no new gun law would have made any difference for somebody that is unfortunately the sick. And it's particularly sad to find out that as a diehard non-believer that he was, that, you say, well, is this one of the things that happens when you kick God out of your life? Or try to? He's never not there, but he tried.
Right. And usually those corrections end up on page 17. You hardly ever see them, and they're just a small paragraph. And the people with agendas do try to get them out right away before the information becomes more clear.
More clear. And then, yeah, like you say, the correction ends up, you know, way toward the back of the paper next to an ad for Vinny's House of Toupees.
Right. It's, right. Don't knock that place. Yeah. They actually have good deals.
Well, they deliver. I think it's overnight delivery, which is really nice when you're having a toupee problem.
Right. But what about gun issue? There's, I don't know how many, 200 or 300 million guns in the country. We're not just going to, that problem's just not going to go away by putting up some more laws.
No, and, I think that no matter what laws you put on the books for anything, this guy obviously, you know, we do have other laws that say you shouldn't be murdering people. We kind of frown upon that. The last thing a lawbreaker does is follow a new set of laws. It's not like you hit, peak lawmaking where they say, well, now that's the one that's going to get me to stop. Do you remember shortly after 9/11, they would almost just come out and ask you at the airport, now, have you packed any explosives?
I remember that.
Yeah. And you say, well, you know, I'm just going to guess the kind of guy that's going to blow up a plane. It's not like he's going to get to that counter and say, oh, I was so close. You got me.
Yeah,
I almost got to blow up a plane. But when you asked me that tough question that you didn't used to ask those before, this new rule, it's throwing me. It's the same thing here. Chicago has some of the strictest gun laws, and they have rampant violence. And we don't address it because, unfortunately, I think we're going to discover what we don't want to discover is there are a whole bunch of other core issues that really need to be addressed, and just passing a new gun law isn't going to stop, people who are a little bit crazy or sick, or people who are just intent on doing harm.
Mm-hmm. Patrick, did you hear that the killer was a Bible study teacher? Did you hear that? Because I certainly heard that right away, and of course, what he did was preached atheism.
Yes, and again, which is so surprising in the internet age that people don't take a little bit of time to, I mean, just pause for a second and say, hang on, can we check some of this stuff out? You know, we're dealing with like this Mueller investigation with the Trump dossier, and you say, we have people, senators, Congress people, even the FBI saying, we can't check out these claims, but let's just roll with it. It's like, really? Mm-hmm. Is that how things now? We actually have at our fingertips the ability to fact check things, and we don't even put in that minimal amount of effort anymore to say, is this true? Is it – wow, this guy was somebody said somewhere that he was a Bible scholar, teacher, whatever, you know, whatever the phraseology was, and they say, let's roll with that. It's like, yeah. Do you want to check it out just in case it's not true?
Yeah. Nope. Good point. Patrick, let me go to break. When I come back, I want to ask you about Donna Brazile's new book, Hacked, and how that's going to affect the DNC going forward. And maybe this puts the Clintons to rest for a while. We'll take a short break and be back with Patrick Albanese in just a minute. It's 16 minutes after the hour. Welcome back to the show. It's 18 minutes after the hour. Patrick Albanese is with me on air. He's here today because the publisher's clearinghouse did not show up at his house yesterday with that white van and the oversized check and balloon. So he's back with me this morning. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning. I'm still, I have 52 magazine subscriptions I just signed up for. So. Yeah, I really still. You go, I don't have to sign up to enter. Oh, come on. You throw my application away.
Exactly.
Give me my fourth. I'll take Good Housekeeping four times, please.
Right. All right. Yeah. Donna Brazile has got a new book coming out tomorrow, and it sounds like it's going to be pretty much a big black eye on the DNC.
Yeah, she's trying to walk back some of the stuff from the political article that came out last week where. You know, she said that much to her dismay, she found that the primary, surprise of all surprises, was rigged for Hillary to win. And now she's going to say, she goes, well, I didn't find any evidence. It says, well, okay, in the article, but the interview you just did, you said, I found the evidence. I had to call Bernie Sanders up. And so this book might be a bestseller just for people trying to sort through the mess, but she's a confusing woman anyway.
I agree.
This woman, she worked for CNN. She snuck debate questions. She helped Hillary Clinton cheat in a debate. She gets fired from CNN. Shortly thereafter, she takes over the DNC as the interim chair. And in her book, she's saying, I was shocked to discover that Hillary Clinton was cheating. It's like, wait a second. 3 months ago, you helped her cheat in a debate. And now you take over the DNC and says, well, wouldn't you, this woman cheats. No kidding. So it's like, and now she's trying to walk that back saying, well, no, I didn't. So I'm hoping that we didn't get, one of these, she didn't wake up with a horse's head in her bed.
Yeah,
just
no
a couple
kidding.
Of days ago and say, well, I got to take that one back. These are Brazil nuts.
Yes.
I read they were a good source for treating inflammation, but these particular Brazil nuts are causing inflammation in the Democratic Party.
Yeah. Well, do you think there's going to be more that comes out about things like Hillary's illness where she collapsed and got chucked into the van like a big piece of meat? Remember that day at the memorial, the 9/11 memorial?
Yeah. And she said that in the book, supposedly, or in this interview, that she at one point considered – just pulling the plug on the whole Hillary Clinton, Tim mm-hmm. Kaine campaign and running Joe Biden and Cory Booker, just kind of doing a one-person show there.
Right.
Because of her health issues or health questions. And the Clinton people have been coming out of the woodwork, and they're now saying that Donna Brazile is buying the Russian propaganda. So we're back to the Russians again.
Mm-hmm.
So those darn Russians, is there anything they can't do? They have not only somehow or another hacked Facebook with $100,000 worth of ads and changed enough votes to win the election for Donald Trump they somehow, or another, the Russians were able to convince Hillary Clinton not to campaign in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and Michigan, states she ended up losing that she shouldn't have lost. And they somehow or another have infected Donna Brazile's mind to make her think she saw Hillary Clinton getting tossed into the back of a van like a sack of potatoes and, you know, showing up saying, oh, it's just a quick little bout of pneumonia. 2 hours later, she's out shaking hands with a kid, infecting her with probably some massive disease. I go, this is getting comical, but it tells me that Hillary Clinton is running in 2020.
I don't think so. I think you're absolutely 100% wrong on that. But anyway, I think that's done. I think the Clintons are going to need to fade into the background in order for the DNC to have any kind of forward momentum. But that's just my two cents. So,
well, adjusted for inflation.
Of course. But I was a little surprised to hear that the DNC was in such rough shape at the tail end of the Obama administration, and that Hillary was going to be the one that would step up and help reduce some of the debt.
It's amazing. That completely stunned me that you heard that Barack Obama was this amazing fundraiser and he left him 20 some odd million dollars in debt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a thing I'm going to be doing with my kids.
Because we
very
parents
similar thing.
Mm-hmm. Sorry about that.
Yeah, sorry, mom and dad. We took that vacation. That was college.
Right.
But we had a good time. So I think it's amazing that – so Hillary Clinton comes along and says, tell you what I can do for you guys. I have a lot of money. You know, you might recall that when I was running the State Department, $6 billion disappeared. So there's money.
I know how to get access to funds.
I know how to get a hold of things. And when we sold Uranium One, somehow or another, $145 million ended up in the Clinton campaign, the Clinton Global Initiative coffers. Here's what I can do. I will bail you guys out. Let me sort of behind the scenes call the shots at the DNC, i.e., wink, wink. That means I'm going to be the nominee. Let's just put on the dog and pony show so people think that they have a free choice. But I'm essentially in charge here. You know, if that gets exposed, I don't know how much that's going to get exposed more than the article we read last week in Brazil's book. But if that, let's just say that if they suddenly are scrambling to pull these books off the shelves come tomorrow, that means they don't want anybody to read the truth. That could be a real ugly thing. She basically bought and paid for her presidency by taking over the DNC when they were so poorly managed that they went broke, with Barack Obama, their chief fundraiser, the genius in charge. They were still broke. I don't know how this happens.
Yeah. Patrick, we just have a couple of minutes left, and I say this with no joy whatsoever. It's hard to believe we've come to a point in our world where people go to church and get shot.
Yes.
And then, wipes out a big portion of the people in the service that day. And then on the other side of the coin, people have stopped attending NFL games. It's just unbelievable that there's so much, there's so many changes in the world. And I look at what's going on. I didn't watch any football yesterday. I don't know if you did, but
I did not. Vin Scully's not watching. I'm not watching.
Yeah. Vin said he's never going to watch another game. I found it kind of amazing, but it's just the world has gotten so crazy on so many different levels.
We've lost a lot of civility. You know, there was a bunch of Twitter feeds where people were saying, well, good riddance to these people. Well, they were Christians or they were Trump voters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny. I hearken back to Aaron Burr shoots Alexander Hamilton, but they have letters of correspondence between these two guys where they would insult each other and then they would sign off with, your obedient servant, Aaron Burr. Mm-hmm. Your obedient servant, Alexander Hamilton, where they still had some civility as much as they disagreed about things. And now we don't even talk to each other. Now, granted, Aaron Burr did shoot and kill the man.
Right.
I'm not recommending that. But it's like, you know, over the years, it seems to be getting worse and worse. And I can't pin this on Trump. You know, this started way back. And they called George Bush Hitler. They called Mitt Romney Hitler. And now, Hitler's not Hitler anymore, and nobody listens to anybody. And I think the most discouraging thing is, even with the evil in the world, that there are some people now applauding it.
I know.
And we got to stop that. We got to go back to your Romans, 12:2. Let's all take the nonconformist pledge.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Right. There's such a loss of civility, though, and we've lost unity and moral consensus. And There's just so much disparity among just about every industry and every group of people and every religion. And so we need to get back to loving our neighbor and not tackling him and breaking five ribs.
It's funny. Tragedy used to bring us together, and now it's pushing us further apart when tragedies happen, and that's not a good sign. We need to turn our eyes to a higher place.
Yep. Let's be slow and steady. Let's get back to the daily reading of the Bible, daily psalm reading, and daily communicating with friends that you love, like I do with you. Well, have a great day, Patrick. I'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week.
Yep. 27 minutes after the hour, we'll take a short break and be back. Let's go to Lighten Up with Ken Davis next. Good morning. It's half past the hour. Keep in mind as you go about your day and get it started, Romans 12:2 says, do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. I'm going to be saying that over and over this morning. We'll take a break for news, and then Dr. Adam Carrington's with us at 20 minutes until the top of the hour.
We're connecting faith and life together.
It's on my car radio all day. Colin Smith, David Jeremiah. I listen to Chip Ingram, Connecting Faith, and Charles Stanley, Susie Larson. Everything I can get to as I go between my different jobs. It just feeds me all day. I so appreciate Faith Radio.
It's more than information. It's transformation. Faith Radio.
Minutes until the top of the hour. This topic is of particular interest to me. It's written a book written by Adam McHugh, and it's called The Listening Life, Embracing Attentiveness in a World of Distraction. And because a lot of the times it's what I say, but it's also what you might be hearing. And Adam says, hearing someone talk and listening to what they're saying are two different things. And he draws that distinction.
Generally speaking, hearing is a sense. Hearing is something that is a natural part of being human. We don't have ear lids to cover our ears like we have eyelids, and so hearing is something that just kind of happens to us, but it may not require that much concerted attention, whereas listening is an act of paying attention to someone or something else. It's a choice. So generally speaking, hearing is an act of the senses, whereas listening is an act of the will.
If you want to hear that full interview, you can head over to myfaithradio.com, type in Adam McHugh, M-C-H-U-G-H, and his book is The Listening Life, Embracing Attentiveness in a World of Distraction. We'll take a break, and then Adam Carrington is with us. We'll be back with him in just a moment.
Examples of anti-Christian bias in our educational system number in the thousands. An overstatement? No way. This is Jim Garlow. Take, for example, in Texas, high school cheerleaders were sued for displaying Bible verses on their banners and posters. A high school football coach put on an administrative leave for praying on the field with his players, voluntarily. Students in New York prohibited from even forming a Christian club. Clearly, one of the biggest spiritual wars in our culture is the battle in our schools for the very hearts and minds of our children. This blindness to the eternal value of faith can only be for one purpose: to knowingly or unknowingly try to turn an impressionable child away from a faith that saves and points to an ultimate accountability and that our nation ignores to its own detriment. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
That wakes you up in the morning, little LZ. 22 minutes until the top of the hour, I have on our studio line Dr. Adam Carrington, political science professor at Hillsdale College. Morning, Adam.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
I'm good. Tomorrow's a big election day, and aren't we all excited about that?
Sure. By the way, there is an election tomorrow.
Yes, by the way.
For,
P.S.
Yeah, this is the strange thing, that there are actually two states in the United States who hold statewide races, New Jersey and Virginia, in an off-year election.
Okay.
Really the only big ones, but they tend to get disproportionate attention because they're also the first larger races that occur post a presidential election. So,
okay.
That's for political junkies. That's the game in town, is what's happening in Virginia and New Jersey tomorrow, beyond, of course, local elections that might be occurring across mm-hmm. the country. But that's the thing that has some national attention.
And, Adam, what's at stake tomorrow in Virginia and New Jersey? Is it a governor's race, or what is it?
Yes. I mean, all statewide offices.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Are attorney general,
okay.
secretary of state, any of those. But the main one that people are focusing on are the governor's races, where you have a Democrat incumbent who can't run again in Terry McAuliffe in Virginia, and then you have Chris Christie, who is not running again due to term limits in New Jersey. So a Republican and a Democrat whose parties are running in an open election.
Okay, what do we anticipate in New Jersey?
New Jersey, I think, is going to be a pretty comfortable Democratic win.
Okay.
New Jersey, for a long time, has been a Democratic-leaning state. Chris Christie was really able to transcend that, but by the end of his second term, he's extremely unpopular. I think that a Republican was going to have a tough road to hoe to begin with, and I think it's going to be a pretty comfortable Democratic win. Nothing's really showing that any otherwise.
Okay, and what about in Virginia?
Virginia is a lot more interesting. Typically, the tendency has been that the party that won 4 years ago tends to lose 4 years later. That would point mm-hmm. to the Republican winning. At the same time, often in Virginia, the whoever's in the White House, the opposite party wins. So that would be the Democrat. For a while, the Democrats seem to have a comfortable lead. Virginia has been trending Democrat. It's not as Democrat as New Jersey. But the candidate, Ralph Northam, has had really given a textbook for how not to close a campaign. There's all sorts of, bad ads, bad moves, switching positions. We could do a whole show on the things he's done wrong. And I think Ed Gillespie, the Republican, has done a pretty solid job of capitalizing on those. So the race has tightened, whereas it was a bit of a lead for Northam before, and I think that the momentum's with Gillespie at this point. And
okay.
if I had to wager something, I would lean toward him squeaking out a victory, which wouldn't have been thought of about a few weeks ago.
Yeah, well, Adam, what's the chatter on the street for this election? Is it going to be a referendum on the president? Are we mad at the GOP or the Democrats, or what do you think is the broad brush right now?
Yeah, everyone's going to want to read a lot into this, and I think that Northam doing as badly as he's done is going to make that harder. I think that one thing to ask is going to see what do voters tell the exit pollers? Because an interesting thing is the lines dividing the Republican and Democratic voters look a lot similar to those in the 2016 election. White working class voters are voting overwhelmingly for the Republican. African American, Hispanic voters are voting overwhelmingly for the Democrat. College educated voters are voting not overwhelmingly but solidly for the Democrat. That's what happened in the 2016 election. So I think that the main thing we're going to learn is that there's still a lot of those divides. I don't think we're going to get a definitive condemnation or approval of the president that I think a lot of people are going to be looking for. I think Virginia is going to be too much of its own animal to make that. I think you aren't going to get a real referendum till the 2018 congressional elections.
Mm-hmm. Adam, how low is the Northam campaign getting with some of these ads? I mean, I glanced at some of these descriptions. I didn't see the ads, but the descriptions of them were horrific.
Yeah, and I should say at least the one that's getting the most attention wasn't put out directly by the Northam campaign,
okay.
but by an affiliated group that is affiliated with the interest of Hispanic and Latino voters. But this one is a pretty new low. I think almost everyone can agree. It shows a Muslim child, African American, Hispanic child, and they are all running from what looks like a white male in a truck that's trying to run them down and sort of calling on Charlottesville, since this is in Virginia, and basically accusing the Gillespie campaign, Donald Trump, of supporting and being on the side and wanting that kind of behavior, basically to attack people for their race or their religion. And it's a pretty new low as an accusation, and I think it's backfired as it really deservedly should.
Mm-hmm. Adam, you're one of the most articulate people I know, and you actually had a little bit of trouble spitting that out, didn't you?
Yeah, well, there's just so much, so many things going on in that ad.
I know.
I don't know who thought that this would be something that would help on the political level, much less be morally and socially responsible.
Yeah. Well, Adam, I'm going to take a break in just about a minute. Before I go to break, I want to ask you, if you are out cutting your lawn, are you nervous about your neighbor tackling you?
I am not, but I am not in Bowling Green, Kentucky, and I'm not a senator. So I do hope Rand Paul is as the senator, is doing a lot better, and that is just showing, again, the amount of violence and accusations of violence we've seen in the last just week has really shown, I think, the fact that we have politicized so much of our culture and taken out religion, family, these other things, mm-hmm. I think has made us make these things life and death in a way they don't have to be and shouldn't be if we have our priorities ordered right.
Mm-hmm. All right, Adam, when I come back, I want to talk about the GOP tax plan and what it's looking like. I'm speaking to Dr. Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College. 15 minutes until the top of the hour. I'll be right back. Good morning, 13 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm speaking to Dr. Adam Carrington. He's on our studio line from Hillsdale College, political science professor. And Adam, I'm going to need you to talk about the GOP tax plan, because I feel like Sergeant Schultz right now. I know nothing.
Yes. Well, they finally at least released some details so that we have something to talk about beyond just the politics of it. And I think that it's obviously any legislation's a starting point. It's not necessarily what's going to finish, but I think there's some pretty good things in it. They're going to lower the corporate tax rate, which ours is one of the highest in the world. They're going to expand the child tax credit, that if you have children, you can deduct more from your federal taxes to spend on them. It increases the standard deduction that if you've done your taxes, do you do a standard or itemized deduction? I think the standard is easier for taxpayers and will probably help a lot of people that are listening, myself included, well. And I think it closes some pretty good loopholes. So that's the good. I think there are some things that probably will or need at least to be changed in its structure and some of what it does for, say, adoption tax credits or I think it could expand the child tax credit more. But in general, I think it's a pretty good start.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything, Adam, in the tax plan that the Democrats and the Republicans agree on?
That's a good question. Generally, the Democrats have taken the posture of opposing it. I think that some of the tax cuts to the lowest part of the tax bracket, this plan reorganizes the brackets for your income into a simpler, I think it drops from maybe 7 to 4 brackets. I think the lowest end, I think most people could agree on. I think that's the main one that maybe the Democrats and Republicans could go around, because it helps lower middle class families that I think all could jump on board.
Mm-hmm. The corporate tax rates being one of the highest in the world, isn't that something that we can kind of agree on and say this is a good idea to bring this down and bring business back to America and give corporations some incentive to reinvest in their business?
Well, this is a question I think that divides a lot of people on what is the ultimate purpose of the tax code. Some people see it as I think what it was most originally meant to do, which is raise revenue for the government so government can do its job, but not do it in such a way that it hurts people, keeps out jobs, keeps out business, keeps out personal savings and investment. But there's another view that basically says the bigger point of the tax code is to right injustices or perceived injustices in society, so that you get certain advantages or privileges based on your job, your race, your identity, you know, where you live in the country, and that a tax code should punish and reward inversely to how society punishes and rewards. It's basically a way of making things more fair. Mm-hmm. And I think that those who oppose the corporate tax cut, that's the thing they're going to argue, is look how many businesses make lots of money, CEOs, things like that, and shouldn't we be punishing, not rewarding them? And I think that's just a different view from the first view of how tax policy should work and who it should affect.
Okay, Adam, one thing that surfaced is the frustration about possibly closing a tax credit on adoption and then possibly imposing a kind of a tax penalty for divorce. Do you know about that?
Yes. So, you know, of course, there's tons of little details, but I think these might be particularly interesting to people. There is an adoption tax credit, particularly for foreign adoptions or private adoptions done through private agencies. The original plan would actually get rid of that, and I'm sure there are people listening, and I know good friends of ours who have massively benefited from this deduction and the encouragement it's given to give children a home that otherwise might not have it or might not have a safe home. That's gone. The other is going to switch. It used to be for alimony. The person paying out alimony could deduct that alimony from their taxable income. And that the person receiving the alimony, it became part of their taxable income. That's actually going to get flipped under this tax plan. If you're paying out alimony, it's still taxable. If you're receiving it, it could be deducted, which means that this would be a little harsher on the higher income earner in a divorce settlement, whereas the previous wasn't. And I think this is interesting because we used to actually penalize people in the tax code for being married. There used to be what's called a marriage penalty, where if you filed as married, you had to pay more. This is now flipping it and saying if you're divorced, there's actually might be a penalty compared to the old tax code. So that's an interesting switch in priorities.
As we are looking at the deficit and as it grows to $20 trillion, are there debates going on right now as to whether or not this is ever going to change or it matters, or how do we reconcile this number in our brains?
There is sort of an inverse relationship between whether you are in power or not and whether you are for or against deficit reduction. It seems that the party in power seems to be less concerned about deficit reduction than the party out. But there are some Republicans who have expressed concern about this with the tax cut. And that's a big debate among Republicans. Should the tax cut be what's called revenue neutral, meaning you don't increase the deficit at all? And mm-hmm. I think almost for sure this will increase the deficit more. And the question is that worth it, because will it long-term spur economic growth?
Mm-hmm.
But there is going to be, I think, a debate. I think the people who are not as interested in the deficit are at least short-term going to win out if that debate comes to a head.
Adam, we just have a couple minutes left, and I want to use those couple minutes to ask you, because I have a feeling you've got an opinion on Donna Brazile's new book called Hacked.
Sure, or at least the sections I've read. I haven't gotten to read the whole thing yet,
yeah.
But there was a pretty bombshell article in Politico that just came out, which was a section of the book. For a long time, people, especially those who supported Bernie Sanders, accused the primary campaign of having been rigged in Hillary Clinton's favor. And there were some, you know, released emails that were hacked that showed that might be the case, but there was no big smoking gun, I would say. And Brazile's book seems to show that. And how it happened was the DNC was cash-strapped. They were really deeply in debt after the Obama campaign in 2012, and President Obama had not done, it seems, much of a job of paying down that debt. So what happened was the Hillary Clinton campaign came in and did a somewhat secret deal to pay off those debts from her campaign fund and to basically fund the DNC so that it didn't, so it could keep the lights on.
Mm-hmm.
But in exchange, I mean, money is power. In exchange, basically got to control the DNC during the primary campaign. It's not a strange thing for a presidential candidate to have massive control over the party after getting the nomination, but this was well before, and I think showed that the scales were tipped, at least in that scale, against Bernie Sanders and for Hillary Clinton.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see the additional fallout. I'm wondering if this isn't going to start to bring the Clinton chapter to a closure.
I think it is. If even Donna Brazile's been about as loyal a Clinton person as you could find over the last 20 plus years. She helped run the Al Gore campaign. If she's turned on the Clintons, I think the Clintons are done, and I think that their control over the party is basically over. And I think, you know, you saw a lot of rifts in the Republican Party that continue today. I think you're only going to see that accentuating in the Democratic Party as well going forward.
Mm-hmm. Adam, thanks so much for being on the show. Always look forward to our conversations. Have a great week.
You too, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, bet. It's 57 minutes after the hour. We'll be back in just a minute. It's like, baby, it's something that we love to see. Thanks to my guests, Dr. Adam Carrington and Patrick Albanese. What a great first hour. We've got a great second hour coming up. Tony Suarez, National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference, was just recently. We're going to get an update on the recovery efforts in Puerto Rico. And then we're going to talk to Karen Swallow Pryor, who's a professor at Liberty University. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.